Hello, it's Wednesday, July 14th, and this is the Tantrum Hour Report. You're tuned in to CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick. The CHMA studio is located in the traditional lands of the Mi'kmaq people, unceded in the Treaties of Peace and Friendship first signed with settlers in 1725. I'm Meg Cunningham. Here's what's coming up today. Erica Butler asks Paul Brisk about his work in progress, Becoming My Own Native, which is part of Live Bait's New Works Festival. We go over the vaccine opportunities in the area this week, including a check-in with Charles Beaver of the Corner Drugstore. And Alexandria Eaton tells us about her ongoing retrospective art show at the Owens Art Gallery. New Brunswick is continuing its hot streak of no new cases of COVID-19. For the eighth day in a row, there have been no new cases. And even better news, there is no one in the hospital due to COVID-19. There was one new recovery yesterday, and there are just 4 active cases left in New Brunswick. The province has managed to vaccinate just a hair under 80% of its population 12 and older with at least one shot of a COVID-19 vaccine. The number that the Path to Green cares about, though, is the number of people who have 2 shots. Phase 3 of the Path to Green lifts all current COVID-19 restrictions in the province, but 75% of the eligible population has to be fully vaccinated for it to start. So far, 52% of the population has 2 doses of a COVID-19 vaccine. There are plenty of upcoming opportunities to get first and second doses of a COVID-19 shot in the Sackville and Tantramar area this week. A regular Vitalite clinic, which requires pre-booking either online or over the phone, will take place today at the Tantramar Civic Center. Throughout the week, the province is also hosting another series of mobile walk-in clinics, including one at the Dorchester Veterans Community Hall on Thursday, July 15th, which is tomorrow, between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. There's also a clinic at the Salisbury Baptist Church on Friday, July 16th, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. These walk-in clinics will give doses of the Moderna vaccine, and so are limited to those 18 and older. And on Saturday, the Corner Drugstore is hosting a walk-in vaccination clinic at their store at 106 Main Street, giving up to 60 doses of Pfizer vaccine. Here's pharmacist Charles Beaver with more information about that clinic. Charles was on the road at the time, so you might hear cars pass his parked vehicle from time to time. So, you're having a clinic this Saturday. How many doses do you have, and what type of vaccine are you administering?
Well, this Saturday at Corner Drugstore in Sackville, we're going to do 60 doses on a walk-in basis, and we're going to use Pfizer so that all ages from 12 years and up can participate.
What hours can people wander in to get a vaccine?
Great question. We're going to be administering vaccine from 10 until 4 with a break at the lunch hour, from 12 until 1 to, you know, refresh ourselves and then prepare some more vaccine for the afternoon.
Absolutely. Now with Pfizer, I know people under the age of 18 and over the age of 11 can get that. Are you hoping to see more children than adults? Who are you hoping to see come out for this particular walk-in?
That's a great question. Anybody needing a dose, a first dose, should come. We're hoping to give service to people who can't come on the weekdays or find it very difficult to make a booked appointment. And definitely I'm hoping to see a lot of the 12 to 17 year olds who have yet to get their first dose in, so there's still time to get 2 doses before school starts up again.
Mm-hmm. If somebody shows up for their second dose, they won't be turned away?
Well, there may be people turned away depending on the response. We really don't know how to predict it. Certainly not. Anybody who's past their 28 days and needs a second dose and can't get in through the week, I'd encourage them to check in and see if we can accommodate them as well.
Okay. And if somebody can, say, book an appointment during the week, what is a better system in terms of the Corner Drugs organization? Should they show up on Saturday or should they book an appointment during the week?
If someone has the ability to attend a booked appointment, it's absolutely the best way to go. We can prepare a vaccine and be ready for them. So that means less waiting. It's a little safer, you know, less potential for crowding. You know, that can be easily done for anybody 12 and over for dose one or dose two at our website, www.thecornerdrugstore.ca.
Mm-hmm. And if this is somebody's either first dose or their second dose, what should they come with other than their arms?
Great question. Well, dressed so you can quickly expose your entire shoulder so that we can properly landmark and safely administer the vaccine. If possible, printing the consent form from the internet, just, you know, NB COVID-19 consent, Google that and it'll come up. And having that completed before you arrive will speed things along, but certainly is not necessary. And if it is a dose two, though, it's very important to bring your blue sheet along that will show your dose one if you received one in New Brunswick. And if you received a dose one 28 days or more ago from another jurisdiction, bring whatever documentation they provided you so we can confirm, you know, that a person is ready to safely receive their second dose.
Right. And I know if it's a first dose, people are asked to bring their Medicare card. If somebody is living in Nova Scotia and they work in Sackville on a Saturday, let's say, and they have a Nova Scotia health card, are you still able to administer their first dose?
That's a great question. Yes, we have the ability to take care of people from any jurisdiction, whether it's in Canada or anywhere in the world. Certainly good to have, you know, their documentation with them, you know, of whatever they have, but that's not even critical either. For instance, if somebody has Nova Scotia PharmaCare and they don't have the card with them, we can still take care of them.
Okay. And thinking more of our more vulnerable population, maybe people who are unhoused or otherwise insecure, if they show up and they literally have nothing with them, can they still get the vaccine that day?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We'll take care of everybody. And, you know, everybody's a priority, whether it's a dose one or a dose two. This is important for everyone and all are welcome.
Okay. Wonderful. Anything I forgot? Anything else that's important for people to know for this Saturday?
I'd ask for patience from the public. You know, Pfizer's a hot commodity these days. We don't really know how many people to expect and can only take care of folks one at a time. So, you know, if people are downtown, say at the farmer's market, or, you know, have errands to do, stick their head in and check in. We may say, okay, looks like I can get you in 15 or 20 minutes. You know, that might work out. Mm-hmm. I'll be there myself. So hopefully we can have an efficient and enjoyable day for everyone.
Yeah, I hope so. Are you anticipating long lineups? Will there be any sort of take a number system, for lack of a better analogy?
Yeah, I have some models in mind. Again, we're kind of doing this for the first time, but basically it could be as simple as, you know, a tear-off sheet with, you know, times at 5-minute increments, and then somebody leaves with the, for instance, 11:05 piece of paper and then comes back. We would then, of course, give them the documentation to complete before they come back, and that would help avoid the crowds. We cannot have, you know, a whole lot of people all at once in the building. It's a very small space. Yeah. So we're hoping the weather's going to be nice enough to ask folks to, you know, go for a walk if need be while they're waiting for service.
That was Corner Drugstore pharmacist Charles Beaver. If you want to go get your second dose on Saturday and you lost your immunization record, you can find it and print it online. The link will be available on chmafm.com. Yesterday, we heard from Live Bait volunteers Ron Kelly Spurls and Cynthia Spurls about the New Works Festival, which kicks off tonight. Today, Erica Butler calls up Paul Brisk Jr., whose new work in progress, Becoming My Own Native, will kick off the festival with a live discussion tonight at 6 p.m. at the Sackville United Church.
Paul Brisk Jr., thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you will be presenting and discussing a new work in progress, Becoming My Own Native, tonight as part of the Live Bait New Works Festival. Tell us a bit about it. What kind of a work is Becoming My Own Native?
Well, it's a little bit of a, I guess the word is amalgamation. It's a bit of a, you know, like a bits and pieces from everywhere where I, you know, spent a very long time of my life with external and internal forces, you know, telling me that, like, you know, this thing about being a native is bad, and this thing about this, and this stereotype and that. And, you know, it affected my life in every aspect, in every avenue, from, like, the type of food I ate to the language I spoke to the type of, you know, this perspective of education that I should be achieving. And becoming my own native is effectively, you know, a self-acceptance and also a love story, basically, of myself to myself, right? Like, it's a whole project of, like, me putting it into words the level of acceptance I've come to accept myself with, while also, you know, bringing Indigenous circumstance to the forefront of the conversation.
Yeah, it sounds so interesting. I mean, it's like a very universal human theme there, like dealing with like you say, the internal, external forces that sort of tell you who you should be versus who you feel you are, or, you know, as you get to know yourself, I guess. But you're bringing a particular experience as a Mi'kmaq from Listigouche First Nation. That layer of being an Indigenous person that many people in Sackville don't have necessarily.
Yeah, like it's a situation that you get to experience a lot, right? I'm an Indigenous person achieving post-secondary, right? And there are a lot of people who think or who believe, right, that, you know, to get that really good job you want, post-secondary is what you got to do. And you know, I come from a place where, you know, it could be as simple as, you know, being able to provide for your own family and, you know, live a nice little peaceful life. That is also equally just as worthy as striving for.
And is this, I mean, I don't know how far along it is. Is it sort of a one person show, or is, I mean, I don't know what people will get a sneak peek of on tonight at 6 p.m.
So it is format that we're looking to take, having it be a two-person a dialogue, right? Because that's effectively what I want to try to have, like, is for this piece to be able to open a line of communication and understand that it's not a one way from either end. It's a cooperative process. It's a process that needs to be done by the community rather than by individual people.
Now, you've been studying drama at Mount A for a number of years now, and you will be heading into your final year in September. What has that experience been like for you? Have there been highs and lows?
Oh, 100%. When I first came to Van Allison, I was actually a music student. And because, like, when I grew up, right, I didn't have any exposure to, you know, formal types of performance of any kind, really. And so, you know, I was prepping to go to university. I was like, I want to perform. And, you know, I got all those things telling you, right, that, oh, if you want to perform, you have to be, able to do it, you know, at X caliber. That was a sentence. So being a music student, right, I got to do some of the musical Garnet and Gold Theater Music Society, for example, in Sackville. And I was like, oh, I love doing this. This is so much fun. And I found myself veering closer and closer to theater until I eventually switched to my current theater program. And it's not come without its struggle, but it certainly has been for the better.
Yeah, I guess switching programs can mean, I guess, a lot more time involved because you're sort of doing two things, I guess.
Yeah, and I went from, like, two pretty extreme, on the same side of the coin, but, like, to go from a music degree, right, like, where you have so much intensive work that you don't have distribution, for example, to go from that to the drama program where you spend, you know, X amount of hours outside of your class time doing theater work, you know, being in shows, stage managing, set building and whatnot. It was an incredibly demanding shift.
And is this current work, Becoming My Native, is that your first foray into playwriting?
It is, yeah. I started in May, so it's like incredibly fresh, and I'm looking to effectively take the piece and work on it with as many people as I can.
Well, I mean, I hope you have a full house there. You're going to be at the Sackville United Church tonight at 6 p.m. And it's by donation, I gather. And people can reserve a ticket just to make sure they have a seat because there is limited seating. What's your next pick for the New Works Festival? What's something that you're going to make sure you go see?
There is a book reading, or I guess a chapter reading or a section reading, being done by Charlie Reindis, that I am going to do my best to attend because I've always known him as a really fun writer and a really interesting person to talk to. So I think that will be a really engaging segment.
Okay, well, thanks for talking to us today, Paul. And yeah, break a leg tonight.
Thanks a bunch.
That was actor and playwright Paul Brisk Jr. You can catch a presentation and discussion of Brisk's new work in progress, Becoming My Own Native, at the Sackville United Church at 6 p.m. tonight. At 8 p.m., Live Bait presents a stage reading of a new play by M. Dallas Edwards, also at the Sackville United Church on Main Street. Admission is by donation, but advance tickets are recommended due to limited capacity. Sackville-based and Moncton-raised artist Alexandria Eaton has over 30 years' worth of her work up in the Owens Art Gallery. The retrospective was put together by the 3E Collective, a New Brunswick curatorial team made up of Aaron Gooden, Emma Hassenshaw-Purley, and Emily Grace Lavoie, who are also writing a book about Eaton's artistic career. Here's the voice of Emily Grace Lavoie, one of the curators of the 3E Collective.
Been working for the past year, and we each wrote about a decade. Mm-hmm. So I wrote about the Moncton decade from the 90s. Aaron wrote about the 2000 when Alexandria was living in Fredericton. And Emma wrote about the last chapter, like 2010 and until today, while Alexandria was back in Sackville. Mm-hmm. And so going through the archive for each decade, that's a bit how we selected the work for the exhibition, mm-hmm. that when the viewer come into the space, they sort of go through the work by year, mm-hmm. but also there's a dialogue between the works as well, because there's like on the back wall, well, we painted while you walk up the stairs, when you look in front of you, the wall is pink, and that's the Superhero Warehouse and Becoming series. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first thing you see. But when you turn to the right, it starts from the 90s and so on, like what we judge was important work in Alexandria's career. Or we can see as well how her works changed through the years and what informed the subject. Although main of her work depicted flowers, there's a lot of figurative work as well, and we can kind of see influences from like everything she was living through during those periods. And I guess people will know more when they they read the book. But I feel like there's this, I feel like she's an authentic artist that go, like, is very honest with her feelings. And so we can see how the work evolves through her life and her daily routine.
The exhibit features paintings, textile work, and even some of Eaton's notes. Here is Eaton reflecting on her work and on the show.
So yeah, I've been a professional artist and exhibiting my work for 30 years, starting primarily as a painter, and then began rug hooking when my children were little and I couldn't always get to my studio and I was looking for ways to work at home. And I guess I really started rug hooking. It was more a personal, private, creative outlet for me. I didn't really expect it to become part of my art practice. But then I realized that the imagery I was using in the painting related well to the fiber art as well. And because I was working on this series of work called Busy Woman that was really just about trying to work full-time and being a mom full-time and feeling rushed all the time. And it was very abstract female figures, compositions, and I began using stencils and rollers. And so it easily translated to how I was working on building up the color in the rug hooking as well. So I was, again, just really working on that independently on my own. And then in 2015, my grandmother passed away, and I was very close with her. She was 104, and we had spent a great deal of time together. Mm-hmm. And because of the deep grief I was feeling at that time, I wanted a way to preserve memories of her so that I wouldn't forget, and also to celebrate her life and her achievements, because she was a really incredible woman and person. So I decided I would rug hook a series based on her life and things she had taught me and I had learned from her. So that ended up becoming quite a large project. It took 4 or 5 years to complete the work, and then resulted in a traveling exhibition. And quite a lot of that work is now in the show at the Owens.
Show at the Owens called Everything in Between. It's up for quite a while. And there's a particular collection. There's a bunch of pieces displayed in like right next to each other. It's hooked rugs and paintings that are about the same size. And there's, I'm wondering if you can tell me about that collection of pieces where you mix the rug hookings and the paintings in the way that they're displayed.
So that's the series I'm talking about. It's called Coming. Mm-hmm. And it, shown, there are 30 pieces in total in that series of work, and it was originally shown at the Beaverbrook Art Gallery in 2018. Mm-hmm. And then it traveled to Sunbury Shores and the St. John Art Center. So in this particular showing, each time it's changed slightly. Mm-hmm. It's the idea was to be shown in a grid formation to suggest the idea of a story quilt or the telling of a life story. So in the really your eye kind of bounces around when it's hung in the grid like that, and it represents a quilt. But each time it's been shown, I've changed it slightly or added new works. And in this particular showing at the Owens this summer, the three curators, three collective, they decided to only show a portion of the series. So there are 18 out of the 30. And rather than hanging it in a grid of three high, they've hung it two works high and in a long horizontal row, which again, every time it's shown, it changes this slightly because of the space and because of the way it's hung. And so it's been very interesting how it has grown and evolved over the last several years.
Do you, are you in any way concerned, or does it impact how you intended the work to be presented when it changes so often?
No, I think it just evolves, like as it should. So I'm really very happy with the way it is shown right now, and it's very interesting to see my work through the eyes of three curators. That has been a really wonderful experience, and in this case of this exhibition, it's a retrospective, so it represents 30 years of work, where this series falls sort of close to the end. So to see it in relation to all the older work as well has been really interesting for me. So,
how much, just to make sure I understand, how much were you involved in the curators setting up the work? Did you have input, or did they just have your work and they just figured out what to do with it?
No, worked with them, and had input. I guess we started working together. I started working with 3E Collective 2 years ago on a book of my work, which is a retrospective publication. So they're very familiar with my work over the years. And so for this exhibition, they really wanted to represent each of those time periods where my work did evolve or change. So yeah, it's so interesting to see my work through someone else's eyes and to see it all shown together. I guess I'd never really thought about seeing, you know, all the older work with the newer work. And yeah, I'm very happy with the way that the show has come together. Yeah, so I started working with these three curators, who are Emily Grasse-Lavoie, Erin Goodon, and Emma Hassenkel-Perley. And we approached the book kind of by dividing it into three chapters or three different essays. So they've each contributed an essay based on roughly a decade of time. So the first decade, I was working primarily in Moncton, where I'm from and grew up, and returned there after I finished school. So Emily Grasse-Lavoie is a Francophone artist from Northern New Brunswick, and she wrote that chapter and really studied the influence of the Acadian artists and the Acadian community and how that really influenced my work at the time. So that, again, very interesting. She went and talked to several artists who were working then, and it did have a profound influence on me, those early years working in Moncton, with the sense of color and joy and playfulness. So that's interesting. And then the second chapter is written by Erin Goodine, who's an artist from Fredericton. And I was living in Fredericton for about 10 years when I had my children. So she relates the sort of the beginning of the busy woman work and the introduction of the rug cooking and how my work was really changing during that decade. Mm-hmm. And then the final chapter is written by Emma Hassenkel-Perley and talks about the more recent work, the mixed media, the weaving, the becoming series. And it comes together really beautifully as it tells a story. And the introduction was written by Kirsty Bell, who also teaches that. So, I can't wait.
The show is up until the end of August, and the book launch is scheduled for this summer. That's all for the Tanchamar Report today. Get in touch with leads or feedback at news@chmafm.com. I'm Meg Cunningham. Thank you for listening.